This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It is Thursday, the 7th of April. My name is Audrey Raj, and with me in the studio today is
Frida Liu.
On the show today, we are going to be talking about some big news that came out of the US last week. If I'm not mistaken, it was on Friday, where Amazon got their first union.
Right.
And, you know, we want to be talking about the state of unions here in Malaysia as well, why we've not heard of much news coming out of labor unions, trade unions here in Malaysia. I know we'll have an expert to chime in on that in just a bit. But in any point of time, if you would like to, you know, join the conversation, you can do that. How, Frida?
Via Twitter, at BFM Radio, via WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. I had to press to the, you know, right.
She's just pointing in the studio here. Yeah. So April 1st was a big day for Amazon workers in the US.
No, it wasn't a joke.
Workers at an Amazon warehouse in Staten Island, New York, voted to unionize, creating the first union of Amazon employees in the US. And they've been trying to do this for the longest time. Now, the Amazon Labor Union, or ALU, won 2,654 votes, while 2,131 voted against being represented. So that's about 500 votes more. The workers there were seeking longer breaks, paid time off if they get injured, and an hourly wage of $30 compared to the $18 they currently receive. And the vote came through on Friday, and Amazon has 5 business days to file an objection, so you know it should be ending this Friday.
Right.
And it has said in a statement that it is considering to file an objection claiming, and I quote, inappropriate and undue influence by the National Labor Relations Board.
Right. So the formation of this union will come as a huge blow to Amazon, which has aggressively fought against such an outcome. Amazon considers it a dire threat to its business model. Its ability to speed packages to consumers is built on a vast chain of manual labor that is monitored down to the second. No one knows what will happen if the newly organized workers try to change their model to disrupt operations, or if their union is replicated among the more than 1,000 Amazon fulfillment centers and other facilities across the country. So they start a chain reaction.
Yeah. So this union is also it's a direct result of the pandemics, specifically protests organized by former Amazon worker Christian Smalls, or Chris Smalls, over safety conditions at the Staten Island facility. So basically, he was laid off on the same day that he made some noise. Amazon alleged that Smalls violated quarantine requirements. Smalls says he was dismissed as retaliation for his protests. His firing sparked widespread outrage on social media, and then it also got back from Bernie Sanders. Smalls went on to form the ALU, or Amazon Labor Union, a group of current and former Amazon employees seeking to unionize. And for the next 2 years, Smalls and you know, some of his co-workers or former co-workers rallied Amazon workers through a series of bonfires, barbecues, and other small gatherings near the Amazon warehouse. Smalls was always at the local bus stop, apparently, you know, where he spoke to workers daily as they went to work. And the campaign raised money through GoFundMe donations. They raised, like, I think $120,000,
right,
you know, to support you know, their labor issues.
Right. And I can just see a movie being made. Meanwhile, Amazon escalated its own anti-union efforts, spending more than $4 million US dollars to fight the campaign. They hired labor consultants to deliver anti-union messages to Amazon employees, while a leaked message from Amazon executives discussing the strategy for stalling the union effort described Smalls as not smart or articulate. Amazon even had Smalls and other organizers arrested for trespassing while they were delivering food and union materials to the warehouse parking lot. But the tenacity of the organizers paid off after workers chose to unionize by a margin of more than 500 votes out of nearly 5,000 employees.
Yeah, at the warehouse, right? So now, what's going to happen next, right? That's the big question. And, you know, initially, I guess maybe the big question was if this election result would will be a one-off, you know, it will be the only union, or if it would start a chain reaction, like you said earlier, Frida, you know, and create like a wider trend among employees working for Amazon. Now, but according to the UK Guardian, staff at more than 50 Amazon warehouses have now contacted Smalls and the organisers of the ALU, you know, of the organisers of the historic vote last week, you know, expressing an interest to set up their own unions. Right. So it's already happened.
Right. So either way, this unionisation drives a part of a wider trend across the US, with interest in forming unions resurging in recent years. Take, for instance, Starbucks. The first corporate Starbucks location voted to unionize late last year, and since 10 others have voted. Only one store has voted against unionizing. The latest and largest Starbucks to unionize is the company's flagship store in Manhattan, which voted 46-36 last Friday to unionize. As Starbucks employees around the country say they're seeing successful union votes at other locations and thinking they could improve conditions at their own stores by doing the same. So some 160 other locations, 28 states, are stated to vote in the coming weeks and months. They're hoping to use collective bargaining to get a number of improvements, including higher pay, more hours, and better safety protection. They feel this is a necessary change since their baristas have become frontline workers during the pandemic. True. They want more say in what their working lives are like, and they want to hold a company that talks of progressive values accountable.
Yeah. So back home, we've also, I mean, if you think about it, we've also seen activity by local unions ramp up during the pandemic. You know, most recently we saw it was UNIMLC, the Union Network International Malaysia Labour Centre. They pushed the HR Ministry, the Human Resources Ministry, to immediately gazette the date of the 1,500 ringgit minimum wage implementation that takes effect in May. Of course, the minimum wage order has not been gazetted yet. Also pushed for the minimum wage to be implemented across all sectors and also cover domestic workers. It should not be just for private sector companies with 5 employees and more only. It should be like for everyone. Yeah.
And a coalition of 58 trade unions and NGOs, the Labour Law Reform Coalition, also put forward a demand that the Prime Minister introduce 80% guaranteed wage subsidy as a step to save jobs and transform the Malaysian social protection system during the pandemic. And recently, Labour Law Reform Coalition was also seen pushing for the Sabah Labour Ordinance, the Surat Labour Ordinance, to be amended immediately so that these Malaysian workers will enjoy the same benefits provided in the Employment Bill 2021. Yeah. You know, when I look at this, and of course, like when you look at Starbucks, right, they're quite known to be friendly with their staff, right, in terms of benefits and all that. So to want to do that, and I get from an employee perspective, I'm trying to put on two hats, right? Employee perspective, yes, right? I need my rights protected and there is strength in unity. Hence the union. But also from the employer's perspective, right? And I get like Amazon's business is speed of market, but the customers are the one paying your salaries, right? I mean, I see that point of view, but this to me only means that they will just look at more ways to automate so that we'll have less staff. That's one thing.
Ah, okay. Well, we'd like to hear what you think on this. Get in touch with us. 018-789-8899 is the number to reach us on WhatsApp. You can also chime in on Twitter. At BFM Radio is our handle. When we come back, we'll have Professor Dr. Nick Ahmad Kamal bin Nick Mahmud, the Professor of Law at International Islamic University, Malaysia. He teaches industrial relations law, and we'll have a whole bunch of questions for him about the state of unions right here in Malaysia. All that and more happening on Enterprise Biz Bytes. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Stay tuned to Enterprise Biz Bytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Best for money, BFM 89.9.
Enterprise Biz Bytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Welcome back. You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes with Frida Liu and Audrey Raj. On the show today, we are talking about the big news that came out of the US last week and how Amazon workers in the US have their first union, started by Chris Smalls and a bunch of existing and former employees. And they won the vote on Friday by more than 500 votes. And it's set off a chain reaction.
Chain reaction, and together with Starbucks, they're also going to find out, I guess, by tomorrow, US time, whether, of course,
there's Amazon, an objection.
Yeah,
right?
Well, there is an objection, you know, obviously. Of course, if you have any comments around this topic, you can also tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. So we want to get an understanding of unions in Malaysia. We have with us Professor Dr. Nick Ahmad Kamal bin Nick Mahmud, Professor of Law at International Islamic University, Malaysia, teaching industrial relations law. Good afternoon, Prof. We do want to get some answers. Can you talk to us about the role unions play in Malaysia?
Well, labor unions or trade unions, as it is defined in the law, does not only mean workers' union. They are also employers' trade union, right? Mm. But I think the focus is on workers' trade unions, and they have contributed a lot actually to the protection of workers' rights actually. So the impetus of having a union is, of course, is to ensure that workers are well protected. And it's also, protection is important because there are a lot of abuses in the past and the present, right? Abuses and exploitation. Yeah. Abuses, it's not very physical in the sense that, but they are, for example, they are not paid the right amount of wages. For example, minimum wages are not applied to them, this kind of thing that is happening. Mm. Okay? And of course, trade unions provide the necessary solidarity among workers. And this solidarity is important to ensure that they would have a better bargaining powers with the employer. In that respect, bargaining powers means that they are able to bargain collectively with the employer and at the end sign a collective agreement. Okay, collective agreement will provide a conducive working environment for both the workers and the employers. And it is actually a win-win situation. And, you know, collective agreement provide them with the necessary terms and conditions that will be making them happy to work with the employer. I think that's the reason why trade union contributed a lot in to the workers' rights in Malaysia.
So historically, Professor, is there a feeling that trade unions have some communist or socialist influence? And is that why maybe we don't feel as though they're seen as much or heard as much here in Malaysia?
Okay. You know, the history has shown us that there's a lot of involvement of communist parties in the early stage of the trade union activities in Malaysia. I think that was before the Second World War and after the Second World War, especially. You know, this was contributed to the fact that I think the Chinese workers that came from China were actually very much contributing to this establishment of trade unions. Okay, and when they came, they brought with them these ideologies of communist ideologies and nationalist ideologies, and they were very much influenced with the situation in China, the war between the nationalists and the communists, resulting in the communists winning and they took over China. And this idea continued, you know, with publications, books, and magazines that actually influenced the Chinese workers. So the Chinese parties was established, and even though they were not recognized by the government, they became active, and one of their way of getting their influence spread is by infiltrating into trade unions. Okay, so, and that's the result of the they have actually contributed to the fact to the labor situation in the country. There were a lot of demonstration, pickets, and even strike conducted before the war and even after the war. So in that respect, communist was very much part and parcel of trade unionism in Malaysia. But it was, before Merdeka, before independence, but after independence, the law has been very strict on trade unions. You know, you must be a worker in the industry or in the establishment or in the occupation, then only you can lead the trade union. Otherwise, you cannot hold off in the trade union. Mm. So that is how the government and British earlier had managed to control communist influence in trade unions.
Okay. Was there ever a period in Malaysia where workers were more actively unionized?
Okay, looking at the overall unionism in the country, is quite low actually, between 4 to 6%. I believe at the present moment it's about 4 to 5% only out of say several millions of workers in the country. So that is considered low if you compare, for example, in advanced countries, Japan, Korea, in Europe and America, where they are 20% or more of the workers are unionized. So in that respect, I do not see a time where we were actually, where the trade union are very much in the forefront for the workers' rights, except for when we hear issues like, you know, big strike or big pickets organized by big trade unions, like the mass workers in the 70s. Right. And of course, the KTMB workers also who conducted a picket and strike later on. So this situation where people will just listen and hear for the first time, perhaps in their life, of unions activism. Okay, mm-hmm. But when the issues were finally resolved, then the interest about trade union just dies off. You know? So we do not know at the moment whether people are really know what the role of the union, especially young people. Are they really, very much involved in trade unionism? Or do they know whether trade union exists in their workplace in the first place?
So why are some of the bigger Western companies so afraid of unions? We've seen, most recently, and we were discussing at the top of the show, what happened with Amazon, but also Tesla, Google, they all seem to be so afraid of unions. Why do some of these conglomerates and corporate giants, why are they afraid of unions?
I think unionism is always having a negative perception, especially on employers. You see, employers do not feel that union is ready to be part and parcel of their industry or establishment simply because they feel that unions are disruptive and also making unreasonable demands. I think that's the main fear. But big multinational companies having their own ways of doing things. At the same time, I believe that there are also multinational companies, larger companies in Japan, in Korea. They have unions. Even in America and in Europe, big companies, they have trade unions. So, and they are managed to control, they are managed to do well in terms of industrial relations, in terms of industrial peace and harmony. But I believe companies like Tesla, and Amazon, because they are multinational and they are having their branches everywhere in the world. So in that respect, they will be very selective in investing in certain countries to see how the country's law on trade union. So in that respect, they will only go to countries where the trade union law is very strict, where they control trade unions really very strictly. So that will be, in a way, provide them with industrial peace on their own way. Remember that we had this issue about electronic workers, in the late 70s, early 70s, in fact. Electronic industry has become a very important industry. In fact, Malaysia was one of the biggest, in fact, the biggest exporters of electronic products. But yet, the electronic workers were not unionized, and these companies that came were multinational from the US, from Japan. They were not unionized and given incentive and protection by the government, but yet they are not unionized. So this kind of situation will be very much conducive for their business, but not conducive for the workers. But again, I think having said that, it doesn't mean that all companies or big companies or multinationals are not receptive of unions. Many of them are also receptive. It's just a matter of how they deal with the trade union. They have to be very friendly to the union, and the workers as well should be very friendly to the employer. I think we should learn from Japan how they treat unions, because I was in Japan for 2 months to study about trade unions and trade union law and industrial relations in Japan. And I was interviewing many of these officials in the biggest trade union in Japan. And they say that they treat unionism as part and parcel of the family of the employers, actually. So they feel that the workers and the employer are having an industry for them, for both of them to benefit for the future and for the children and for their families. So in that respect, an industry or establishment or occupation is actually part and parcel of their life. And therefore, they are treating each other like family members. So rarely we see industrial actions in these countries, even though they are sometimes, but rarely that they have that problem. And I see that perhaps what we can learn is how these people, how the industry in Japan deal with trade unionism.
So it doesn't have to really be dealt with animosity, and it doesn't have to be like your side, my side, polar opposites. It really can really work together for the benefit of the entire organization.
Right, because you want to get down, I guess, to the grassroots. And of course, Professor Dr. Nick Kamal bin Nick Mahmud, Professor of Law at International Islamic University in Malaysia. We are not finished with him yet. We'll continue our conversation after this. Again, if you have any thoughts around this, chime in on Twitter at BFM Radio, WhatsApp 01. 0818-789-8899. Stay tuned.
BFM 89.9.
Yes.
Stay tuned to Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Build Fairer Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Enterprise BizBytes, presented by Allianz Malaysia.
Welcome back. You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It is Thursday, the 7th of April. It's Frida Liu and Audrey Raj in the studio today. We are talking about...
We are talking about the state of unions in Malaysia. And of course, you know, earlier we were speaking to Professor Dr. Nick Ahmad Kamal bin Nick Mahmud, Professor of Law, International Islamic University, Malaysia, who is teaching industrial relations law. We've still got him on the line. We've got more questions for him. And of course, in the meantime, any thoughts, please let us know via Twitter, BFM Radio, WhatsApp 0187899. All right, Prof, thank you for staying in the line. I want to ask you, do unions sometimes hinder progress towards high value economies, especially when we're moving towards industry 4.0?
Okay, one thing about IR 4.0 is the reality of industry being having less manual workers. I think that would be very interesting. Okay, but again, you know, even with the handfuls of workers that work in the IR 4.0 industries, I think they still need to be unionized, you know. But again, you see, like I said earlier, that the younger generation, are they really concerned about trade union? Are they really concerned about having represented by a trade union? Because with, you know, young people feeling that they are on their own all the time, there's no need to have a union at all. There's no need to have a representation, whatever means. So in that respect, that would then affect this culture or this idea of unionism. So that would perhaps one setback that we'll be have to you know, to deal with when we come to IR 4.0. Right. But yeah, but I think still, trade union is still very important, whatever way that you are doing things, because you will never know that you need friends around you to help you. I think that's what union is all about.
Yeah. Right. So what does it take to unionize, Professor? You know, what's the process like?
The law is very simple. If you have 7 workers gathering to establish a union, you must register the union within 1 month after you have established it. So these 7 members will apply. They fill out the form and submit the form to the registrar of trade union or the director general of trade unions. And they have to have a constitution. They need to fill up the forms. And today is very easy because MTUC will help workers to be unionized. They will help to train them how to manage and so forth. But once you are registered, then there is a problem with recognition, because recognition by the employer is most important. Because if you are not recognized, then you cannot proceed with collective bargaining and then sign a collective agreement. So this is always a problem. And most recently, of course, the law has been changed. In the past, recognition will be decided by the minister. Now, recognition is decided by the Director General of Industrial Relations. So that, in a way, has shortened the process. But still, you know, the problem of getting the employer to be receptive of having a union in the workplace, that has always been the case. And we still have the law that prohibits trade unions to represent workers in all industry or all occupation. You must be a very specific industry and specific occupation or establishment, like what happened before the war, you see? But today, you need to establish a union if you are within a particular trade industry occupation. For example, plantation workers can only become members of plantation industrial plantation trade union. Commercial workers only with commercial trade unions. Okay? Right. So this is a kind of a setback. That is also hinders actually the number of memberships in trade union, because that is why trade unions remains very low. We don't have large trade union like in Japan or in Korea or in the US, you know, because of this requirement. But of course, we look forward for changes, because it seems that during recent Dewan Rakyat, there was a first reading of an amendment, a substantive amendment Trade Unions Act, which now will allow multiplicity of membership in trade unions. That will be very interesting.
No, I was actually going to bring up the point about, you know, how blue-collar jobs, you know, they are the ones who, I guess, will mostly greatly benefit from unionization. And yet, you know, we see migrant and foreign workers here. We've heard of stories of how they have suffered abuse, they've been ill-treated. What are their options in order to form a union?
They themselves cannot establish a trade union because a trade union must have an executive committee, you see. Foreign workers can become ordinary members, but they cannot hold office in trade unions. That's a requirement of the present law under TUA, the Trade Unions Act 1959, Section 28. But they are allowed to become members, ordinary members. But would they become members? There's a lot of hindrance there, because simply because of employers would not be happy if they are members of trade unions. That's right. One thing. Because, you see, employers provide them with, apply the working permit for them. So if they see these workers are not really friendly towards the employer, they are now unionized and they will not renew the working permit. So this kind of intimidation may work to prevent trade, foreign workers from become members of trade union. So right. There must be a different way of looking at things where other countries allow foreign workers to become members and actively participating. I think we should be looking into that. So in the absence of that freedom for foreign workers, then we need to protect them in a different way.
Freedom.
Okay. Final question, Professor. Is there anything we can learn from unions overseas? I know you mentioned Japan earlier, but, you know, aside from Japan, maybe some policies that we can adopt for better practices here in Malaysia?
No, I mean, we have been, we've been very restrictive on union law for more than 60 years now. Right. So we are looking forward for the changes, the amendments to be made to open up and more to make the trade unionism in Malaysia more flexible in terms of law. So even though we have not adopted the Convention 87 of the ILO that allow us to or require us to provide the most freedom to trade unions. OK, but we are moving towards the state where we are now opening up and giving more flexibility. So learning from Japan is one thing. Learning from trade unions in the Scandinavian countries will also be good, because they are, like in Japan, they are taking union, or they are considering union to be part and parcel of the family of the industry. All right. So in that respect, whatever dispute that they have, it ends up at the negotiation tables, and it will not go to the tribunal or go to the court. I think this is what we should be doing, because if you are able to resolve it before it goes out of hands, like, you know, having the trade union having to organize industrial actions. Now, if that can happen, you know, one thing I learned is that if you are able to negotiate things, meaning to say that you are able to give and take to whatever stand that you have, then you don't have to go to court. You don't have to go to tribunal, because you can resolve it amicably. So in this respect, both parties must be willing to give and take. Both parties must be reasonable in their demands. Mm-hmm. I think that will make industrial harmony and industrial peace achievable in this country.
Right.
Right. Thank you so much for that, Professor. That was Professor Dr. Nick Ahmad Kamal bin Nick Mahmud, Professor of Law at International Islamic University, Malaysia.
So I was just saying, earlier during the break we had, I was just saying how important this collective is, you know, like, for example, the Voice Guild, right? The Voice Over Talents and all that. They got together because there was one time, you know, when they get projects with little small studios and they're little freelancers, right? So that's separate from union, where you're employed by an organization. Guess, right, in a way. So when they didn't get paid, at least they then collectively say, well, we won't do any work with you unless you start paying us. And of course, then, you know, you don't pick on the little boys, like, you know, so to speak. So there's always strength in unity. Very interesting comment there. We got a comment here from anonymous person who says, please make me anonymous. Association Bank Officers, a.k.a. ABOM, usually negotiated their collective agreement through their lawyers, hardly had to pick it, except the one time I recall was in the mid-80s after the financial crisis. You weren't born, Audrey.
I'm not going to say anything on air. Right, but that, of course, was our show today when we discussed the state of unions here in Malaysia. If you missed out on any part of this show, you can go look for the podcast on our website. That's bfm.my. Of course, we prefer for you to check out our podcast on the BFM app that's available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. We'll have more on Enterprise Biz Bytes for you same time tomorrow. But taking us out of the show now, we have G.R. Walker and the All-Stars with Shake and Finger Pop. Thank you for joining us on Enterprise Biz Bytes.
Yes, this
BFM
show.
89.9.
Enterprise Biz Bytes was presented by Allianz Malaysia, empowering businesses to build confidence in tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.